welcome to Wham Bam Pow. This is your favorite movie podcast, a show about iFi? A show about sci-fi and action movies. This is Rhea Butcher, also known as Pamplemousse, also known as the Lady James Dean. And with me today, I have two guests, not just one, because Mr. Ricky Carmona, Coco Palau himself, what it do, people, is out on the road with his Threesis tour, so go check him out. And Cameron Esposito, the host with no nickname, is in Chicago filming her first movie. Yay for that, which is pretty great. So joining me today is the star of Netflix's Grace and Frankie, Mr. Baron Vaughn. How are you doing, Baron?
Ladies and gentlemen, Lily Tomlin.
I am neither Grace nor Frankie. I'm okay. I'm playing POW today on the podcast.
Perfect. Yes, thank you for playing POW. And my BAM is Jane Fonda. No, just kidding. It's Jesse Thorne. Mr.
Hi.
Jesse Thorne, the CEO of Maximum Fun Incorporated. How are you doing, Jesse?
You're fired. You're hired.
The stacks of paper in front of you just keep going up and down and up and down.
My secretary is going to be bringing me things to sign, and I'm going to be handing her dictaphone cassettes.
Perfect.
To transcribe.
Perfect. So Grace and Frankie, Baron, yeah. How's that been going? You just started season two, yes?
Yes. Well, literally this week.
Yeah.
In a couple of days, we start shooting season two. I am excited. I was hanging out. Gonna ride home for Martin
hanging
Sheen
out.
The other night, like
oh.
like you do.
Yeah, of
like
course.
You do.
Of course. Mr. President Martin
yeah,
Sheen.
President Bartlett.
what
was
Mr.
going
President.
Were you just too drunk to drive?
No. I just don't have a car.
Okay, got
I
it.
Haven't had a car for 2 years, and maybe the second season of Grace and Frankie
that might...
will enable me to get a car in
I
Los
don't
Angeles.
Know. Try to get that ride with Jane Fonda and Lily Tomlin, then get the car.
Jane doesn't drive.
Oh, well, there
she
you
actually
go.
Takes Uber.
She works
what?
Out the whole way.
Yeah, she takes Uber a lot because she's Jane Fonda, and 95% of Uber drivers have no idea who Jane Fonda is.
Oh, my God,
is. So
you're
she just
right.
gets into it. She's like, I don't
like,
know who I am.
It's like the episode of Grace and Frankie about the exact same thing. Not that they're famous in the show, but there's a really great episode where they go to buy cigarettes. I highly recommend that episode.
And they
don't want to spoil
it. Sounds great. With a description like that, I don't know how people can skip it.
I mean, Lily Tomlin and Jane Fonda go buy cigarettes. I'm there.
Yeah.
I would buy popcorn. I would sit in a theater to watch that
the
scene.
The point of it, because there's a lot about age and ageism in the show. So the whole point of that that piece of it is that they're old women, therefore no one pays attention to them. And but I won't say any more than that. Yeah. Otherwise, I'm giving too much away.
Yeah, don't give that away. And we will not give away too much more fun stuff. Today on Wham Bam Pow, we're going to be talking with Baron and Jesse about a movie very dear to my heart, 1981's Thief. Right after this, we'll be back with some news, reviews, and things you can use.
Hey everybody, I'm Emily.
And I'm Lisa.
We co-host Baby Geniuses every other Monday on Maximum Fun.
We interview comedians, musicians, cartoonists, circus clowns, and experts in the field of...
vacations, the afterlife, cool recipes, self-improvement, fashion, candy, beach boys, girls, turtles, plot twists, women dating, fitness, presidents, hair removal, conflict resolution, Santa, meditation, babies, modern dinosaurs, bullying, crop circles, the Beatles, middle-aged men, experts, teens, life hacking, rhyming, baby talk, personal organization, the name Dexter, Frasier, extreme eating, groceries, being a best friend, movement, jam, art education, America's funniest home videos, stockbroking, spooky stories, genealogy, riddles, Pinterest, IT, magic, revenge, mothering, dogs, ayahuasca, Hollywood legends, street racing, fitting in, celebrity sex, the occult, personal training, the ocean, Dennis the Menace, modern poetry, sugar gliders, Jimmy Buffett, Franks, The Tonight Show with Gun, Johnny Carson, Mountain Dew, theme park safety, dinner parties, butterflies, raccoons, pasta shapes, and Bob Dylan. Join us every other Monday!
Yay!
I like that rhymes.
Comfortable shoes.
Yeah, exactly.
Getting over the blues?
Couple of brews.
Yeah. I paid my dues.
Don't be a coos.
Yeah. 9 minutes, hit snooze.
Yeah. Oh, man. We should just do the rest of the episode riffing on that.
On
you
rhymes?
Guys want to do that?
Yeah. Just rhyming couplets?
Yeah. But we're back this week with, the biggest news is probably Comic-Con.
I've heard about this. This is like, this is an annual celebration of comedy in San Diego, right?
Yes, that's what it is.
It's where all the comedians get together.
Where all the comedians go. We shake hands with each other. We give each other the light.
I'm just kidding.
Pretzels.
Yeah, I know that Comic-Con is about newspaper comic strips.
Yes, it's about news. It's about Dick Tracy and Brenda Starr.
And Kathy.
And Kathy.
It's a whole ACK booth.
Man, I really loved the family circus. That was a lot of fun.
God,
I went to an amazing Prince Valiant panel.
Almost as good as the Hagar the Horrible.
Did they unfurl the new strip?
What's the one where it runs in the sports section? Do either of you guys read the sports section? There's a comic strip that's in the sports section sometimes. I want to say Funky Winterbean, but I think that's Funky Winterbean is a different thing.
Funky Winkerbean.
Winkerbean?
Winkerbean. No, it is Winkerbean because the guy that drew it is from Ohio. And there's a restaurant in it that's based off of one of my favorite restaurants in my hometown of Akron, Ohio. It's based off of Luigi's.
So Comic-Con.
So Comic-Con. I went to Comic-Con for the first time this year. Have either of you been to Comic-Con and inside the walls of the halls?
As much as I enjoy everything that Comic-Con has to offer, I do not enjoy more than 20 people in one place.
Sure,
so I understand
that.
I have not been there.
Yeah.
But I do want to try that.
Yeah.
I've been there two times.
Two times?
The first time I went, because I had the idea, what if at some point we did my radio show, my NPR show from there? And I thought, this is a great idea. And the press people were very unhelpful.
Oh, I'm sure.
But me and my intern, which was the entire staff of the entire company at the time, went down there. And I got in there and I thought, holy shit, this isn't cool. This is a nightmare.
Yeah, it's pretty terrifying.
Horrible. Like, I didn't realize, like, I had heard people joking about it smelling bad.
Right.
And I didn't realize that that's a real thing.
Oh, I've never even heard that.
It really smells horribly of BO. Like, it is gross inside.
Yeah. Well, because you think about, people are dressed up.
Yeah.
And then they're wearing that all day long.
And they're committing
to
those characters.
No matter how much they're... Yeah, I mean, you can't... If you are wearing a full Chewbacca outfit, you are going to smell pretty dank by 3 p.m. It's just going to happen.
You're going to smell like...
And then also, you take into account there's a lot of kids in there. Then there's a lot of people that don't normally attend any social functions whatsoever. So yeah.
One time they go outside a year.
Yeah,
I like
exactly.
that Baron just innovated how they bleep out the swear words on Chewbacca's rap album.
Yeah, exactly. Because I don't and then I don't.
Yeah, Baron's great at that.
It's a horrible Chewbacca impersonation.
Me and Jordan went down there to do a Jordan Jesse Go show maybe 3 years ago, I'm going to say. And we were invited by a guy at Warner Brothers. I'm just going to say it. Warner Brothers.
Yeah. Oh, was it the frog?
Yeah.
Was it Yakko?
Michigan J. Frog.
Michigan J. Frog.
We were invited by somebody from the television network, the WB.
Right.
It was the Wayans Brothers.
Sure.
Yes. Pre-white women.
So we got invited to come do Jordan Jesse Go on this stage, and our friend Scott Simpson was there from the hit podcast You Look Nice Today, a really funny comic, and so we booked Scott on the show. We get there, the stage is in a field, basically,
right
in a field next to. We went and ate lunch at literally the Fox Sports Network restaurant, even an ESPN Zone restaurant,
word.
The Fox Sports Network Oof. Restaurant. And that's where it was a field outside was where the show was. But we're like, you know what? We're just going to do it. And there was probably 25 diehard Jordan Jesse Go fans there standing in this field.
Confused in a field.
and then just six people that were waiting for the Alias panel later,
right.
You know?
Yeah, of course.
And so we go up on stage. We're backstage and Dana Snyder is backstage from what's that thing called? Aqua Teen Hunger Force.
Yes.
And he's one of the nicest, funniest guys you could ever hope to meet. We didn't know he was going to be there. We're so happy to see him there. We're chatting with Dana Snyder. We're like, this is going to be great. We go up there. We are 10 minutes into what had been planned to be a 45-minute show. And off stage, we're frantically getting the wrap it up sign. So I'm completely baffled as to what's going on. 10 minutes in. 10 minutes
Ten
in. Now,
minutes
granted,
in.
We're not exactly killing, but we're doing fine considering
sure.
there's 20 people milling around in a slightly rainy field
right.
in front of the stage. So we're getting the wrap it up sign. I'm trying to figure out what's going on. And then... we get a more frantic wrap it up sign. And I'm like, I'm wrapping it up. Gave them the okay, thumbs up. And I'm sort of just trying to bring it home.
All right.
And then
all right.
Our mics get cut.
Whoa.
And I'm like,
Oh, wow, they pulled that one.
That's
hello?
Serious.
Hello? Yeah. You know, like, what?
That's like the step right above a giant cane just coming on stage and yanking you off.
Yeah, then the Sandman came out.
Yeah.
And so we walked into the... So we are completely baffled. We have no idea what's going on.
Yeah.
So we walk off stage. Like, literally, we thought maybe the power got cut out or something because it was like a weird outdoor stage. And this little woman... is screaming.
Winona Ryder?
At us. It was Winona Ryder. Yeah, from...
Little Women.
From the movie.
Who is also a little woman.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
This sort of small, middle-aged white lady is screaming at us. And when I say small, I mean, like, I'm 6'3", and
sure.
She can't have been more than 5'4 or 5.
Right.
So, like, a small, even for a woman... but wearing big heels and fully screaming at us.
Uh-huh.
And we're like, what's going on? Ma'am, we have never met you before. Why are you screaming at
us?
It turns out this woman is the head of marketing for Warner Brothers.
Oh, wow.
She is there to oversee Batman or whatever.
Right.
She is in charge of a, you know, $4 billion budget
at
Warner Brothers. And she's taking time out to cut our microphones and scream at us. She's like, who the fuck?
Was there supposed to be something? Did she want something else in
place
of you
guys? So apparently she was upset that we swore.
Wow.
Which, I want to be abundantly clear, no one had said to us, don't swear.
Yeah.
No one. There was no children in the 20 people milling
around.
You
weren't aware it was supposed to be a G-rated
exposition. Yeah. At one point, Scott made the just totally amazing observation that the city crest for San Diego should be a flip-flop rampant on a field of volleyballs.
That makes sense to me. with the words, embrace the Stoke underneath it. Because that's, the whole time I was in San Diego, that's all I could think of. Everybody is just so stoked,
and
you
like,
know,
so,
in San Diego.
So ultimately, like, we got screamed at by this woman for probably 10 minutes.
Sure.
And we, like, it wasn't until at least 8 minutes in that it was explained to us who she was.
Right.
Or why she was yelling at us or what was going on. Or even that our mics had been cut and the power had not gone out. And so we just sort of wandered away.
Like, in that Comic-Con sort of way, just wandering off into like another field of promotions.
Did she ever calm down or was there ever any point where
and the guys
were understood by anyone else?
The guy who booked us was full on hiding.
Like, of course.
No joke. No. He's like hiding behind some amplifiers.
Hiding in the Fox Sports dining hall.
And like we sort of milled towards him just to like maybe he could give us some context. And he like skittered away like a hermit crab.
Yeah.
And we were like, okay, I guess we weren't getting paid for this. The other thing is like we're not getting paid for this show.
Yeah,
we're
free.
Doing it just because we were like, yeah, sure. We'll go to San Diego and do a show at Comic-Con. So what happened is we just like milled around inside of Comic-Con until we could no longer tolerate the odor.
Yes. Yeah.
And then just got on a train back to Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Just $70 poorer and with a
stinky
Comic-Con specific experience.
Yeah. That sounds very similar to my experience.
Really?
Not really.
Oh.
Disasters that happened.
Yeah, I did have a disaster in Comic-Con. I went down to do a show at Woodstock 7 on the Thursday night.
This is like Paul and Storm and Will Wheaton and stuff?
Indeed it is, and Adam Savage. And there were some other folks on the bill as well, and that was at the Balboa Theater. So I went down for that, and then I got added to dear friend Steve Agee's shows on Saturday at
Lovely
the American
human
Comedy
being,
Club
Steve Agee.
In San Diego. Amazing. Both shows, so much fun. However, Friday was the day that I commandeered a badge. My name became Kate for the day, which was interesting to have a different name for a day.
Kate Hepburn.
Yeah, old Kate Hepburn.
That's weird that they put old Kate on the name.
Old, yeah, it was old Kate. And I was like, yeah, that fits.
I didn't put dead Kate.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh.
That's how old she is.
So then I went through Comic-Con for a while and got, you know, overwhelmed and excited and very depressed. There was almost no Back to the Future or anything. Couldn't find anything. I think there was going to be something unveiled, but I just couldn't wait for it.
You need
I didn't have
additional
the time.
Nerd interests.
I no.
Only Back to the Future nerd is not going to cut it.
It's the 30th anniversary. It totally works. I mean, I checked out the Star Wars stuff. It was interesting. Had
that
a
was
good
the,
time.
That was the big problem for me. I was like, where is the Archer section
yeah.
of this?
Like, there was a
I'm
good Archer
to think
section
of things.
This
like,
year.
Is there a baseball section here? Because right. I'm definitely
where's
a baseball.
Can I get a Satchel Paige Sandy somewhere?
Yeah,
come on.
Exactly.
It's just too boring. I did buy an Alien t-shirt. Like, it looks like you're a crew of the Nostromo. So
oh,
that,
nice.
That was,
fine.
Hey, come on.
That's fine.
I bought that. I did not buy any toys, old or new, because once you bust that seal, I'm just going to have to get a new credit card.
Right.
So I didn't do that.
Because you can't, that's a collection. Like,
yeah,
it's
once you
either
get
have one thing and it looks stupid, or you
yeah.
just have to keep going.
Once you pop, you can't stop.
That's true.
So whether it's Strawberry Shortcake, She-Ra, or Ghostbusters,
right.
I'm just going to have to get them all. So then hung out for a while, walked around. Then in the evening, finagled my way into some parties, fancy dancy, on Friday. And I make it like a personal, because I'm a lifetime vegetarian, it's my personal mantra to never eat free food that I can't immediately decipher what it is. Like, if it's a grilled
right.
cheese, hey, is there bacon in that? No? Perfect. Great. I can ask one question, figure it out. Is there meat in that cantaloupe? You know, that's a question I don't have to ask.
Right.
So that I
actually,
will eat.
I think you do have to
in
ask
some
that.
Cases,
well, in some
meat
cases,
meat and cantaloupe go together.
Sure, yes. But then I had some pals with me, and they were like, hey, are those vegetarian? They said yes. And they were like, come on, eat some. So I did, which was a big mistake, because I was in the party. It was 11:30. I had just, you know, I'd been milling around, and there's like, you know, whatever, famous people walking around. And I was like, I have to leave now to my friends because I could not see. I like thought I was going to pass out. I had to like wobble my way out of Petco Park and try to make small talk with our Uber driver, who had a full length rear view mirror.
I just
in
assumed
his Dodge Charger.
Oh,
I just
wow.
assumed you were going to say that you had to try to make small talk with that Tony Gwynn statue.
Yeah, I was like, "Hey Tony, what was it like when you hit for the yeah, it was real great." So then
and
I went
he was
home.
Like, "You won't believe how I sound when I talk."
Yeah.
The whole street.
Come with me. And so then that evening I then had food poisoning for 6 hours from midnight to 5 a.m. So 5 hours. My math is
off.
It
affected your relationship to time. That's how
it
bad
really
the food
did. Yeah,
was.
I was stuck in there for so long, I lost an
that
hour.
You went back to the future.
Yeah,
but it's fun to be with your tribe. Am
that.
I right, guys?
Yeah, just feel it, feel alive. But I will say, then I went and did those shows that night. I had full on food poisoning and did the shows.
And
then
killed.
Sunday, played on my baseball league, went 4-for-4, one of which was a double opposite field.
You're
in
a baseball league?
Yes, I am in a baseball league. I play third and. I played second and shortstop this week.
Is it ladies only?
No, it's co-ed.
Oh, and it's baseball?
It's baseball.
You just got
no
very
softball.
Excited.
Let's talk about this after
we'll
the show.
We'll talk about this after the show.
Oh.
Yep, went 4-for-4. Not too bad on defense, but I wasn't involved in two. I tried to turn a couple double plays. Didn't happen because they were sliding into me. Funny thing about playing with men, they play just as hard with you, but then when they hit you, they're like, oh my God, are you all right? Are you okay? And you're like, yeah, I'm fine. You didn't even, he didn't even get me with his cleats. I was like, yeah, it was mostly just dust, you know? I was like, yeah, I'm fine. You didn't even get me. He's like, are you sure? Are you sure? Are you all right? Are you okay? And I said, dude, I'm fine. I'm fine. And then a dude on the bench, this is at second base, on the bench is like, hey, are you okay? And I said, I'm made out of the same stuff. I am 100% fine.
That's going to be great on stage.
Sure.
I'm telling you.
Thank you, Baron.
You got to do that one.
It's a fun chunk.
Thanks. It's a great chunk. So
you're going to have to explain that you are actually in a baseball league and it's a baseball league. And then
yeah,
people
yeah,
are going to be like, hold
thing.
On. Well, then
wait
let's talk
minute.
About it after the show.
Because
yeah.
I want to join.
I've been
yeah.
looking for
women?
It.
Yeah. But to get to movie stuff and Comic-Con, I think I didn't wait in any lines and I didn't go into any halls or anything for anything. But this morning I did catch up with that Force Awakens trailer and I've been a little, you know.
Oh, there's a new one?
Everybody that listens to this show knows that I'm not, both feet are definitely not into the Star Wars camp necessarily.
Is it J.J. Abrams?
Yes, J.J. Abrams.
Okay.
I'm looking forward to it. I don't think it's going to be as bad as the first three. And then this one got me excited again.
Did you like Star Trek the movies from J.J. Abrams?
Yeah.
I did. Well, he only did the first one, yes?
Oh, he did two.
And He did do.
Did he do the second
one?
No,
he did not do two. That was Damon Lindelof and the other guy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
he produced it.
And Justin Lin is doing the third one.
That's right, Justin Lin.
So I feel like they're going to go back. I think the second one was okay. It was a little confusing. Mostly their promotions for the movie. But seeing the Force Awakens stuff, and they took everybody to a concert, a symphony concert. At Comic-Con, did you guys see that?
I heard that at the end of the panel, they just brought everyone out of the hall or whatever and went and sat down in the San Diego Symphony, played Star Wars songs.
Yeah. I believe J.J. Abrams was like, do you guys like the music from Star Wars? And everybody was like, yeah,
ladies and gentlemen, John Williams.
And then he was like, all right, follow me.
Ladies and gentlemen, an alien band.
They're called the Mos Eisley Six. The most deaf comes out, he's most deaf Isley. Nobody's with me? Okay.
But I am really excited and they are really hammering it home in this trailer, how much they're focusing on practical effects. But I think it's going to pay off.
God damn it, I wish I could think of what... Oh, okay, it's now the Yasin Bey Isley.
There you go.
God, it took me
a little bit
so long to think of what Mos Def calls himself now. Just call yourself Mos Def.
And then my brain went that the kid from Attack the Block... is in The Force Awakens.
Oh, okay.
Did you ever see Attack the Block?
I started watching it, and it broke my heart too much. I have to go back to it.
You definitely have to watch it.
They were so mean to that thing. I couldn't deal with it.
You definitely have to go watch it
again. I couldn't deal with it. I will watch it. So, Baron, we were talking, because you guys don't want to talk about the practical effects of Star Wars. I'm just going to move on. What trailer did you...
my weekend, I was in Chicago at the Great Chicago Comedy Exposition.
Of course.
And then being all jet lagged, as I'm wont to do, I was on Facebook and I saw someone had taped, of course, the Deadpool trailer from their phone. And there was a link like, it's not taken down yet, watch it. I was like, okay, fine, I'll watch this Deadpool trailer.
You were scrambling, your laptop's flying up in the air between
your
fingers.
Yeah, it was my cell phone. Yeah, it was like, beep, boop, 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 boop. Because I'm like out of date. I'm like, is the Wi-Fi in the hotel ringing? This hostel? It looks great. That's all I can say.
Yeah.
Is that like Ryan Reynolds, and there's also this scene between Ryan Reynolds and T.J. Miller where I'm like, but don't they have the same speaking voice? I couldn't tell, actually, because the video was not amazing. I'm like,
sure.
I think it's just him talking to himself.
One of them has a soft body. One of them has a hard body. That's how you can tell
the
difference.
That's what it is. Deadpool looks incredible.
Why is Ryan Reynolds a movie star? What is his... Has he ever done anything that was a success?
Yeah, he's done a couple different things that were a success. He's also done a couple of things that were horrible failures.
I'm not shading him. I don't know what he did that is
good. I feel like The Proposal did pretty all right.
Van Wilder, yes. Van Wilder's what put him on the map.
See, I thought he was put on the map by two guys, a girl, and a pizza place. Mm. That's where I thought he
The guy from American Pie isn't starring in any upcoming comic book movies.
That is true.
I guess he exercises less.
It might be that Ryan Reynolds also, which, by the way, I ran into him. I went to an audition for something completely different, but they were auditioning Green Lantern that day, so I saw him walking out of his audition to the Green Lantern, because I was looking at the thing like, what?
And you were like, don't
Am I coming
it.
At Bradley Cooper? Wait a minute, is this right? This isn't right. Ryan Reynolds in all leather and a motorcycle helmet. Oh, I'm at the wrong place. Let me go next door. Which they make a Green Lantern reference in the Deadpool trailer.
Perfect.
Which is great because that's a horrible movie. I think it's going to be the movie that actually does a lot for him, actually, Jesse, because you're right in the sense that he's gotten a buttload of chances and all of them have kind of been misses in a lot of ways, especially in the last 5-6 years. And I think Deadpool is finally going to be... Oh, Ryan Reynolds finally got something that's right for him.
He is like a handsome, not that he is a handsome Jim Carrey. Like, not that Jim Carrey is not handsome.
He's handsome, but it's just that Ryan Reynolds is handsome
and then like goofy funny, right?
He does have that goofiness. He hams it up. He's very hammy, but
he can turn it down.
Yeah. Isn't that Brendan Fraser?
Sure. He's all eyes, and he looks like a Disney cartoon. Brendan Fraser looks like a Disney prince to me.
Yeah, that's fair.
He's always doing... or
What is Deadpool?
I don't really know.
Do you not know what Deadpool is?
I don't know what Deadpool is. Is he an X-Man?
No, he is in the Marvel Universe. He's not an X-Man. Oh, man, this is... This is complex stuff that we can't necessarily get into. They kind of ruined Deadpool in the X-Men Origins Wolverine movie, which was an atrocity.
Uh-huh.
And but Ryan Reynolds actually played Deadpool in that.
They're wiping that. They're sort of doing a brain
they
wipe
wiped it
and
clean.
Acting as though
if you saw didn't... X-Men Days of Future Past, there's like a whole thing in it where they're like, and we've erased anything that Brett Ratner did.
Yeah.
But I think it's going to be a good one. Also, I watched the Batman vs. Superman, the new trailer, which I just hate all of those.
Sure.
I saw Man of Steel. It still makes me upset.
I didn't like Man of Steel. Everybody knows Ricky Carmona loves that movie.
Ricky's
wrong. It was so boring.
And I will debate him.
I did not like it very much.
Ricky's wrong about a bunch of stuff, but that's part of his charm.
Yeah, it's, you know, he's got personality.
Yeah.
He's got
joie de vivre.
He's got joie de vivre and the worst opinions. Just kidding. But we will be back right after this with our long-awaited review of Michael Mann's Thief.
Welcome to the Lady to Lady Show. Behind door number one, we have fantastic weekly guests like Aisha Tyler, French Stewart, Retta, and more.
Behind door number two, we have road trip and sleepover games like Would You Rather and Never Have I Ever, the kind of games that remind you of being a kid.
Door number three brings you fresh hot episodes every Wednesday. You can find them on iTunes and at MaximumFun.org.
Now pick a door. Just kidding. They're not real because we're a podcast.
You're all winners.
And we didn't really think this through. Lady to Lady.
You guys, we're back with my favorite part of the show. Now is when we review a dick flick. This week's movie is 1981's Thief by Michael Mann, which is available on Netflix Watch Instant. So if you haven't seen it yet, we are going to spoil the movie. We're just going to talk about it openly. So if you don't want to be spoiled on this movie, just save this section, watch the movie, come back and listen. Or if you don't care, just listen. Just have a good time. We're going to be real funny and make you laugh.
In one way or another, you should imagine like circa 1979 futuristic electronic soundtrack underneath.
Yes, just keep that going in the back of your head. Tangerine Dream.
Tangerine Dream.
It.
Just imagine Tangerine a lot
Dream.
Of streets at night that have been hosed down.
They're
with
all
water.
Hosed down. So Thief is a 1981 movie directed by Michael Mann, also written by Michael Mann, the screenplay. And it's based off of a novel called The Home Invaders, Confessions of a Cat Burglar, written by Frank Hohimer, which is a pen name for a real jewel thief who I will leave in anonymity because I believe in it. Look it up if you want to. The movie also stars James Caan, Tuesday Weld, Jim Belushi, Willie Nelson, and Robert Protsky. It also features Dennis Farina in a very small role and William Peterson, who later stars in Michael Mann's Manhunter. And William Peterson is so young in this movie that it took me this viewing and purposely watching for him to find him, because I'm so used to him having gray hair and everything, and he has a
and following beard. A Who soundtrack.
Yeah,
was this literally Dennis Farina's first thing?
I think it was.
Because he was also in Manhunter as well.
Yeah, and I think there's a cop connection, you know, like he sort of was...
Right, he was like a consultant. It was like one of those things where he was
word.
Like a consultant on the movie, and they
yeah.
just thought
they're
he was
like,
so cool
great.
That they kicked him a line. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So then the plot of this movie is becoming closer to his dream of leading a normal life. A professional safecracker agrees to do a one last job for the mafia, who may have other plans for him.
Hold the phone. One last job.
It's a one last job.
This would probably go really smoothly, right?
Totally smooth.
Always does.
But I feel like this is one of the movies that set up the one last job paradigm.
Absolutely. I was just going to say that. It's a very like original version of that. It doesn't feel retread. You know, it's definitely... To me, I forget that it's a one last job movie, even though I've seen it like 10 times. I always forget halfway through, like, oh, right, this is a one last job kind of a movie. So I personally found out about this movie through a podcast when, you know, podcasts were not a thing. And I used to listen to Seen Unseen. Do you remember that podcast, Jesse?
Yeah, sure.
And they talked about specifically running into James Caan and quoting this movie back to him and him being really excited about that. I was like, I got to see this movie now. And then I was blown away by the time I finally found it. How did you guys get to this movie? Because I feel like it's a gem. It's one that not everybody knows about.
I was talking to my good friend Rhea Butcher about a movie I love called Manhunter,
sure.
which is also by Michael Mann. even though Manhunter is not spelled with two N's. And
yes. Well, that would be weird it's if it confusing. Was just a movie yeah. about someone hunting the director.
Hunting
of
Michael
the movie.
Mann. Exactly. That's when that would be a great movie, except it would be like just like that movie that they made about the guy who directed
Don't You Forget About Me?
Yes.
About John Hughes?
About John Hughes.
Yes.
And except it's Michael Mann, except he's not missing.
I would picture it as sort of a more of a Roger and Me type thing.
Oh, really? Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah.
Maybe both. Let's. It's probably be a little bit of both.
But Michael Mann is a sort of genial muckraker,
in a lot of senses, in a scary sense. There, Leah and I were talking about Manhunter, and I was talking about how much I love the movie and how it's stark. And you were like, "Well, have you seen Thief?" And I'm like, "No, I haven't actually seen Thief. I'd heard of it, but I'd never actually watched it. Plus, I didn't know it was a Michael Mann movie. So it's really only a couple years before Manhunter. So it's like where he started to kind of start. Where he started to start that style he started.
Sure.
But I loved it. We
yeah.
watched it on your television, and your dog was barking most of the time.
He's gotten a lot better.
Yeah, which is fine. But I very much enjoyed this movie. And also, I watched this, and I watched Manhunter, and I'd be like, oh, this is what Nicholas Winding Refn is trying to do.
Yes.
Yeah.
This is what he's trying to, with all the electronic music and yeah. all of the style and the...
Yeah, there are a solid 40% of Drive is just a thing from Thief.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Exactly.
Which, God, I enjoyed both movies. So.
Yes, so do I.
In a good way.
He does it very well.
He doesn't, I wouldn't say he apes the style. He's clearly influenced by the style and making an updated version of it.
I'd say he apes it, but he does it effectively.
Ape, grape, whatever.
Grape ape.
Yeah. This is one of those movies to me that as soon as it comes on, after the MGM lion goes away, there is a mood that is set and continues throughout the whole film.
Absolutely.
And you go into a world. And I also love this movie because I lived in Chicago when I saw it. And this is, 1979, 1980 in Chicago.
And
that is not
how old
the...
were you at the time?
I was -2. Mm-hmm. But this is a Chicago that, didn't exist for me, but I could still feel in Chicago. You can still see it. There's a scene where he gets pulled over by the cops and they kick out his taillight. That is right down the street from my house. And that on-ramp looks exactly the same. So I love that about Chicago as a place to shoot movies. It sort of has that weird evergreen, just American city. It could be the 50s or right now. At any time. I love watching this movie because it's dated, but it doesn't get in the way. It's dated in a really fun way to me.
The first time I watched this movie was on VHS.
Mm-hmm. Perfect.
I got it from the video store. Went and got it from the video store.
Oh, yeah.
This is my number one genre of movie of anything.
Neo-noir?
It is I like a genre film where it is most quiet most of the time.
Sure. no talking.
It's beautiful.
Yep.
And you're like, oh shit, what's about to go down?
Yes.
That's what I want yeah. out of a movie. I would say my other favorite movie in this genre is The Limey.
Oh yeah.
Another movie that is a pure genre movie made by a brilliant director.
Of course.
Even more brilliant director, I would argue. And it is it's quiet most of the time. Sometimes somebody says some shit and you're like, oh, shit.
Whoa.
But it's mostly mood.
Yeah, it's mostly mood.
And looks and silent acting that is incredibly effective because, like you say, right in the beginning, you're put in this world and then it's about 25 minutes where you're like, oh, wait, I'm watching a movie.
Right. Yeah.
I've just been sucked into this thing
the
entire time.
Yeah, the opening sequence, the cinematography of that alleyway, it is absolutely gorgeous. I could just watch that over and over again leading into the safe cracking scene.
The only thing that this movie is missing that would make it my personal apogee of genre film is Euro boobs.
Sure.
That's the one. I want some
love that
very
band.
Sincerely and artistically presented boobage. As in, for example, what is the movie one of my go-tos of a movie in this genre that I like to use as an example because it's not that good. it's fine, but I really like it way more than the amount of good that it is the one where George Clooney is an assassin.
Out of Sight?
No, God, okay. that's a great movie.
Okay.
That's one of my all-time favorite movies.
The American?
The American.
Okay.
So The American is a B minus movie. It's perfectly fine, but it's not great. But I love it because it just I just want to watch George Clooney put together a gun and just watch a beautiful Italian woman take her top off, watch blood spread through a field of snow.
Sounds like a perfect movie to me.
Yeah.
Very noir. Again, very noir.
Absolutely. I also, there's the dialogue in this movie is so, pardon to be like super cliche and film nerd about this, but it's like lived in dialogue. Everything that people are saying feels very real, and things that that cops in the 80s would actually say in Chicago. I love, one of my favorite lines in this entire movie is when Frank meets Leo for the first time. They meet at night, that dock, and then the cops are watching from like a light tower or something. And the main cop holds up his binoculars, looks out because Frank's getting paid, and he goes, "Jesus Christ, that's got to be 2 inches of money out there."
Yeah.
That is a great story.
If that is not the best description of money you've ever heard.
Which, yep. By the way, when we watched this movie together, you paused it. Yes. And you're like, that's the best description of money.
And well, I pull that, or I point that line out to everybody that watches that movie because I love it.
I think James Caan's performance in the center of this movie, I mean, there's everyone else is perfectly good as well.
Absolutely.
But James Caan's performance in the center of this movie is so vital to what makes it such a success because, you know, James Caan is a guy who can literally kidnap his girlfriend.
Yes.
Violently kidnap his girlfriend. And they're, like, making plans to adopt children and get married, like, 5 minutes of movie time later.
Sure, yeah.
And
it's
you
probably
are
a
on
day.
Board.
Yeah.
You
oh,
are
yeah.
on board 100% with this nightmarish brutality. You're like, yeah, sure, of course. Yeah. Why wouldn't you marry James Caan?
It makes sense.
Yeah, he's a complete, yeah. Well, I mean,
he obviously has a plan.
Yeah. Given that the Oasis diner scene, there's sort of like a, for me, you know, the feminist that I am, you know, he does manhandle her to get her out of there. The argument in the car to the diner scene of Frank being like, "What do you? I wear $150 slacks. I change shoes or cars. Like guys change their shoes. So great." And then they get to the coffee shop, and they both lay it all out for each other, and they're basically the same. You know, they're coming into this pretty equal. Man, do I love it!
Yeah, that's actually my best / worst moment of the entire movie.
How about we just get into it, Baron? What is your? Let's do.
I think it's the same.
Let's do best first. What's your best part?
Well, but that is to me. That's where it flips from the different characters' perspectives. From James Caan's character's perspective, that's his best moment in a sense, where he makes this impassioned pitch. He pitches himself and says, "Look, I got this plan, and it's going to fit like this, and it's going to be like that." Because one of the reasons that you believe this character is that internal, because he's so silent, is that internal conflict he has, where it's like he's a thief because he has to be a thief. He doesn't romanticize being a thief. This is the lot in life that he has gotten himself into, and he wants to get out of it. And now he looks at this woman, and he's like, this is my key out of this thing. So to me, his pitch and what he does there is the best moment. But then the worst moment is the kidnapping, is the fact that Tuesday Weld's character just kind of is like, I guess this is what we're doing. So it's just like, oh, wow. It's like she's robbed of a choice, but also chooses that choice, if that makes any sense.
Yes.
So it's, I'm like, is that good for her? That's what I'm thinking the entire time.
Well, it's such a double-edged sword, like you're saying, because he's also talking to her about the dude, her last dude, basically, that could have gotten her in a really serious situation, did get her into a serious situation, but it could have been worse, and he just keeps pounding home like he's an asshole. He did it wrong.
Do you know what they do to you every day when you do a bit in Colombia?
In Bogota. In Bogota. Yeah. I love how they keep pronouncing it
very
that
Chicago.
Way. Yeah, so Chicago. So, Jesse, what's your best part of Thief?
I think if I was going to pick one part, it would simply be the opening sequence,
mm-hmm.
which is, I think, you know, one of the parts that Nicholas Winding Refn really deeply
copies
from Thief. But there's a beautiful opening sequence in which James Caan's character is essentially, heisting.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you see as this Tangerine Dream electronic future music from the 70s that you might know from Blade Runner, if you don't know it from this, sort of swells underneath. He is like doing this like industrial work of opening this safe. So it's like this really fascinating combination of, and it runs throughout the movie. I think it's one of the reasons it's so well set in Chicago. It's like this combination of the normal thing that you get from this kind of movie, which is this feeling of, you know, craft and artisanship, but also just, you know, molten metal being poured and sparks flying. This kind of very beautiful, kind of elegiac industrial feeling. And so it's those two things going on at the same time. And there's a shot where he drills his hole into the locking mechanism. He takes his chisel. He pounds out the piece. The piece falls out. And just for a second, and I don't know how they did it. They must have done it practically because it was 1979. The point of view of the camera goes into the hole. And it's just a moment. It's not a big showy thing. You know, it's not like going into the wounds in Three Kings, where they go into the gunshots.
Oh, yeah, oh, right. David O. Russell. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not like a big showy thing. It's just a little moment that like drives you through to this one point of focus that he has. I think that's pretty fantastic.
Yeah, I love that moment. And I think that moment is also when David Fincher was born.
Yeah, exactly.
Because he watched this movie and went, oh, I'm going to do that every time.
And that's a beautiful thing about this movie. You see that influence
absolutely
on all of these directors who came after.
Yeah, and I think it is also the moment when Michael Mann thought to himself, oh, I know what the rest of the movies in my entire career are going to be like. Exactly this.
Just like this.
Because it is the same. Robert De Niro is an extension, and Heat is an extension of 100%. James Caan's character. Yeah.
I think Thief is a much better movie than Heat.
Oh, no, it is.
I can say that because Ricky Carmona's not here.
He's not here. He would have left the building if you said that. But I also agree with you that this is a better film than Heat. I mean, they're going after two different things. But yes, it's a far better film. I think that my best part is two moments in this movie, and they're both James Caan. The first is when they crack the big safe that they have to build a huge torch to blow into that's like 8 feet, takes three people to hold it, and James Caan is, of course, the one wielding the welding, and so he breaks through, and then he just sits down and like lights a cigarette, and there's still all the commotion going around. Jim Belushi and the other dude are still moving around. But he just sort of, like, flops in a seat because he's been holding this thing. It's super hot. He's wearing, you know, head-to-toe gear. He's, like, covered in grease and lights a cigarette. And for a second, he gets this look on his face of, like, that's it. Yep. I did it. I made it. I'm done. And then he goes back to work. And I love that moment. And I actually just caught it today when I rewatched it today. And that is what I love so much about this movie. You can go back to it and get so much every single... There's always something new in this movie because it's so layered. And my second moment is my first favorite moment at the end when he invades the home of Leo to get revenge. He does this amazing reload where he just like throws the clip out of his handgun. He just, like, unloads it and throws it to the right or to the left. I can't remember. And then reloads. I've never seen anybody else do that in a film.
It's just super cool.
It's just the coolest thing. I mean, it's just James Caan being the coolest. And it's so tactical. And I love how much in the movie he says at the beginning when he first talks to Leo, he's like, none of that home invasion cowboy shit. Because that's what I'm going to do to you. You know, and also it's based off of a book called Home Invasions. And then that's exactly how we end the movie.
You know,
like a perfectly executed home invasion.
You know what I would like to see from you just going forward on Wham Bam Pow?
What's that?
Just rank all movies based on tacticality.
I will. I will
so
rank.
So tactical, somewhat tactical, insufficiently tactical.
Is this True Detective tactical? So, Baron, your worst part.
Yes.
Is what again?
Oh, it's Tuesday Weld's. It's the fact that she goes along with him.
I'm
looking at the characters here because it's like, and that was where for me it was like, oh, she. That's why I'm like, is it the best for her?
Sure.
But there is that sense that you feel like she, it is the best for her, but she has no other situation.
Yeah.
But then also I'm like, it's still stuck. Like she's stuck in a completely different situation.
Yeah, they're both stuck, different situations, but they're both stuck. They can't get out of the boxes they got put into.
So it's beautiful to me because they found each other, but they're the only people who can be with each other, but that's also what sucks about it.
Yeah.
is that right. This is just going to be another pattern lived out to a horrible extent.
Yeah.
I'm going to say my worst moment is Jim Belushi.
not being John Belushi?
Not okay. Because Jim Belushi is bad in the movie. He's perfectly good in the movie.
Sure.
He does a perfectly good job. It's just like, who could you cast in that role that would be more distracting to a contemporary viewer than Jim Belushi? Like, if it would be less distracting if it was Kareem Abdul-Jabbar playing that role.
In his outfit from that movie he did with
Airplane?
Bruce Lee.
Airplane? Oh. Never mind.
Enter the Dragon?
Yeah. No, was it Enter the Dragon? It was Game of Death.
Game of Death, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I feel like I was literally looking at this and thinking, like, on the one hand, feeling guilty because Jim Belushi really does do a perfectly good job. Like, there's no, I have no issue with his performance.
Right.
It's just, I cannot look at him and not think of him as a symbol of all of the worst things about comedy circa 2002.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I was like in my head making a list of people. Like, I would rather it be like Spiro Agnew. Or like, there's like no one.
Lucy from Peanuts, the
Ed,
cartoon.
It's
got to
be
person.
Somebody super Chicago, though. That's why he's
Ed
there.
Ed the talking horse.
Mm. Well, Wilbur, well, they're done with this welding.
Well, my...
I made the system, Wilbur.
That's great. The water's fine. I love that scene when he's like flopping around in San Diego or wherever they are. That's the one thing I can never discern. It's hard to tell the different locations apart.
Hawaii.
At some point.
It's a spectacular. I mean, here's the thing that I really love about the movie, and I mentioned I love a beautiful movie.
Yes.
It is a fucking beautiful
It's beautiful.
Movie. It is spectacularly
There's not a wasted
beautiful.
Shot. There's not a bad shot.
No. It's noir. It's noir.
It's
in that,
neo-noir.
That,
yeah.
That true sense where it's just so much information in every single shot.
It's Nighthawks.
Yeah.
You're watching, every time it's nighttime, you're watching Nighthawks. You're watching that painting.
And
every
that,
single time.
That tone absolutely never breaks.
Somehow
they managed to maintain that tone in a daytime shot where he's wandering through the used car dealership.
Sure,
he owns.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it is, and the music I think helps a lot in addition to the way it looks. But, you know, Michael Mann is like, as a director, he has his deficits. He may not always be the most compelling storyteller.
Sure.
As anyone who saw Miami Vice the movie can tell you.
But not Miami Vice the TV show.
Which I've heard is pretty great. I've never seen a Miami Vice the TV show.
I just know that he's the only person that's ever adapted his own television show into a movie 20 years after the fact. But continue what you were saying.
It seemed like such a great idea to me
it
at the
did.
Time. Because it was like, that was like peak late period Michael Mann. You know, he just made Collateral and Ali, both of which were very good.
Yeah.
Collateral's good.
And... and then that Miami Vice was just, and it just seemed like the right thing for him to make. I was like, it'll be like Thief.
Yeah, but it's not.
Oh, it is horrible.
It's Miami.
I think it's Colin Farrell, but that's just me.
Sure.
Colin Farrell is pretty god awful in that movie.
Not great. We need American actors in noir.
Jamie Foxx is pretty bad in that movie, too, to give him credit where credit's
playing
due.
Off of Colin Farrell.
Yes, Thief. So my worst part is the fact that more people need to see this movie.
Yeah.
That's my worst part of this movie.
Oh, you don't think it's recognized enough?
Not enough. I mean, I think people are paying attention to it now because it's, you know, because podcasts are a thing and movie criticism
Wham, bam,
is like,
pow is a thing.
Yeah, because I talk about it, so a lot of people know about it.
Hey, I wrote an outshot about it for Bullseye.
Yes, you did, which is why you're on this right now and why I'm on this right now in some ways. Ooh.
Paradox.
Let's see. So Baron, on a scale of 1 to 5, move that cougar on the corner. How many move that cougar on the corner do you give it?
Wow. 4.
4? Perfect. Jesse, on a scale of 1 to 5, you want a kid? Yeah, I can get you a kid. You want a kid? You want a brown kid? You want a black kid? You want a yellow kid? I'll get you a kid. You want a kid? I can get you a kid.
Doesn't he say name your model?
Yeah, probably he does.
He does.
God, he's disgusting
that.
The way he sits in that booth in that scene. It's so perfect, but it's so disgusting.
Exactly.
1 to 5, what do you give it, Jesse?
5. This is one of my all-time favorites.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's see. And for me, on a scale of 1 to 5, I ate Taco Bell in that highway oasis. I give it 5. I ate Taco Bell in that highway oasis.
I'm going to clarify mine. I'm going to say 4 to 4.5 neutral observer. points. Yes. I think it's a really excellent movie, but then it gets the extra half to one for being my exact favorite
kind of movie. Yeah, no, I like that. That's a good adjustment, Jesse. Thank you for that. Baron, what are you leaving everybody with?
I want to leave you all with a TV show that you should watch. I was going to say this to Jesse before. It's called Bosch. B-O-S-C-H. It's an Amazon original series starring Titus Welliver. It is in the style and feel of Thief.
Awesome.
It is perfect noir.
I love that guy. I love that character actor. I've been like following him for a while, and that's great news to hear that it's very good. Jesse, what are you leaving us with this week?
I am going to leave people with this. If you like the movie Thief, I wrote an essay about it for Bullseye.
There you go.
And you can Google it. Just Google Thief Jesse Thorne.
Thief
Jesse
Thorne.
That'll bring it up. It's up on SoundCloud, and it's got that beautiful music behind it, so it makes it sound like it's good, even though it's not that great.
It's great. From what I remember it coming on. I remember listening to it at my desk at work and being like, hey, watch Thief. Somebody else watch Thief. It's not just me. And
I feel like Ricky Carmona, like, tackled me.
I feel like he did, too. Through his earbuds, he tackled you. And I am going to leave you guys with a movie that I hadn't seen probably on purpose, and I just watched recently and could not believe how much I absolutely loved it. And that movie is, I believe, 2001's Legally Blonde. I loved that movie.
You never saw Legally Blonde?
No, I hadn't seen Legally Blonde, and I watched it, and it blew me away.
It's really good.
With its, like, feminist politics in the movie. I could not believe it. I loved it so much.
The second one.
I'm not going to. Just, I'm leaving it at the first one. I liked it. I'm leaving it there. So I highly, highly, highly recommend it to anybody that hasn't seen it.
I'm changing my recommendation. If we're doing recommendations of things that are my aunt and uncle's favorite movies, Legally Blonde is my aunt's favorite movie,
perfect.
I think. My uncle's favorite movie is Drumline, and I watched it at his house, and it's fucking great.
Nice.
No wonder it was such a success. It's like the most fun, charming movie you could ever.
Yeah.
Like,
1 minute's too long, but that's me.
No curveballs in there.
No
curveballs. I don't want to get your hopes up for any surprises.
And my aunt's favorite movie is Dirty Dancing. So anybody else listening for that one, check it out.
I've never seen Dirty Dancing, so I'll have to check it out on
behalf
of your
God.
Aunt.
You have to watch it, Jesse. It's a very good movie. And I just wanted to let everybody know, I was on How Did This Get Made recently, watching the movie Runaway starring Tom Selleck. So you guys should listen to that. It was super fun. And until next week.
I'm Baron Vaughn.
I'm Jesse Thorne.
And I'm Rhea Butcher. You've been listening to Wham Bam Pow. Wham Bam Pow was recorded at Maximum Fun Studios by Lindsay Pavlis. Thank you, Maximum Fun. And thank you, Lindsay. And thank you for listening.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.